Morning, and today's Daf and Sanhedrin is Ayin Aleph. We begin today in Ayin Amud Beis. We are talking Achah Maaser Sheni B'Yerushalayim, eating Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. We are talking about a number of exemptions for the Ben Zohar Amora. Again, to become a Ben Zohar Amora requires a lot of specific variables in order to be satisfied. And as we're going to see, it's at least according to some opinions, which we're going to see later this morning, it'll get to the point where it's going to be nearly impossible. In fact, the Gemara is going to cite an opinion that it is impossible to actually get to a Ben Zohar Amora. But in other words, but before that, we're not there yet. But right now, we're just talking about the meat and the wine that he needs to drink in order for him to qualify as a Ben Zohar Amora. So notably, the Mishnah told us that the meat that he has to eat and the wine that he has to eat has to be kosher. It can't be not kosher. If it's not kosher, he's not defying his parents, he's defying God. And interestingly enough, he doesn't become a Ben Zohar Amora for just the defiance of God. He has to specifically defy his parents. And on top of that also, if it's a Dvar Mitzvah, if he's eating in the context of a Mitzvah, that also, and it's meat and it's wine, so that also won't make him a Ben Zohar Amora. Those are the two points that we've been sitting on since the Mishnah. And we just have a couple more things that we're going to round out before we get to the next Mishnah on the top of the Amud, on top of today's Daf. Alcha Maaser Sheni B'Yerushalayim, so he eats Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. So again, the circumstance over here, Rashi spells it out. So basically what he did is he pilfered. He went into his parents' little drawer or whatever, the little safe they have in the house, and he took their Maaser Sheni money. Maaser Sheni money, the money they've been collecting to bring to Yerushalayim so that they can buy food in Yerushalayim. So they took the Maaser Sheni money out of their parents' house. He went to Yerushalayim and he ate, and he didn't eat the money, but he took the money and he spent it on wine and meat, and he that's not going to make a Ben Zohar Amora. Why not? Now it's funny. If the Gemara didn't say anything right now, so I would have said, really simply, because it's a mitzvah. Meaning eating Maaser Sheni is a mitzvah. That's what I would have said. Now, right? But again, that's not right. But that's right. But still, in other words, but that's the halacha by Ben Zohar Amora, that if he's doing so in the context of a mitzvah, he's not a Ben Zohar Amora. So the Gemara says, "Kevin Dechi," and it's just, I'm sorry, and it's just interesting because, quite frankly, that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, "Kevin Dechi Orchehu Kaacholay Lo Mimshach." So the Gemara says that this is considered normal. I mean, that's what people do. People eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, and therefore this is not considered addictive behavior because this is normal, and so therefore he's not going to qualify as a Ben Zohar Amora. Now, it could be, right, now it could be that that's really what the Gemara means. The Gemara could just simply mean, and it's a mitzvah, and given that it's in the context of our Gemaras that we're discussing right now, it could be that's what the Gemara means, although, quite frankly, that's not what the Gemara says. Okay, in any event. Okay. Achol Nevel Shrefet Shkatzim V'Ramatzim Amar Rava. The Gemara now quotes a halacha from Rava, which is Achol Basarof and Anas Ben Zohar Amora. So to qualify as a Ben Zohar Amora, it has to be meat. It has to be red meat. So stealing money from your parents and buying chicken with it, that doesn't cut it. In other words, again, we're not. I'm going to state the obvious, and we're not condoning any of these behaviors. It just simply means he's not going to be a Ben Zohar Amora. He doesn't qualify as a Ben Zohar Amora for eating chicken. It's just chicken. So the Gemara says, V'ha'anan tenan achol nevel shtrefa shkatzim v'ramasim, einu nasi Ben Zohar Amora. And the Gemara says, now look at our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says that if he eats non-kosher, so then he doesn't qualify as a Ben Zohar Amora. Now look carefully at the Mishnah. Look at the list of things that are mentioned in the Mishnah. So nevel shtrefa, okay, so fine, that's meat, that's red meat. And then shkatzim v'ramasim are bugs. Now, the non-kosher bugs is what's going to give him an exemption from Ben Zohar Amora. But the clear reading of the Mishnah, the clear inference of the Mishnah, is that if it's kosher bugs and they're out there, they exist, I'm not interested, and we don't have a Masorah in terms of what they are. But, which are two points that work well together. So, but nevertheless, so they're out there. The kosher bugs are out there. And a simple reading of the Mishnah is that after stealing his parents' money, he buys it on kosher bugs, he will become a Ben Zohar Amora. And this goes against Rava, because Rava says that chicken is not considered meat. So the Gemara says, meaning it's not considered meat vis-a-vis Ben Zohar Amora. So the Gemara says, ha tahara nasa Ben Zohar Amora. So the Gemara makes exactly this deal that we just made. So ki tananami masisul nahashlim. So the Gemara makes the following suggestion, and that is, look, in order to be a Ben Zohar Amora, Rava's right. You got to eat meat. The kid's got to steal money from his parents and buy with it red meat. But let's say he just didn't get enough red meat. So to supplement the diet So what he's now going to do is he's going to supplement it with a little bit of other types of meat. A little chicken, a little grasshopper, and okay, so in other words, okay, a little shish kebab, a little shmorg of all different types of meat. So lahashlim, if it's just a supplement to get to the shear, so that's fine. Meaning that will get him to become a ben sarah mora. But if it's just chicken, if it's just shkatzim for a muslim, so then he will not become a ben sarah mora. Continuing in the Gemara, achal davar shu mitzvah v'davar avera. So davar mitzvah tanchumei avelim. So let's go over a couple of examples. So example number one of a davar mitzvah tanchumei avelim, and Rashi points out over here we're talking about the Seudas Avra. Okay, after you come home from the funeral, the first meal that you eat in the house is what's referred to as a Seudas Avra. It gives you emotional comfort, physical comfort. It's right, literally comfort food. Okay, that's barring the expression that's used nowadays, that's what it is. It's comfort food, and that's a mitzvah. Now Rashi over here writes that it's not a mitzvah daraisa, meaning it's a takana derabanan, but still. Again, the idea is that if the child is eating the meat and drinking the wine in the context of a mitzvah, even if it's a mitzvah de Rabbanan, he will not become a ben sarah mara. Davar avera tanis sibur. And an example of davar avera would be a tanis sibur. And again, over here, again, just to focus on the example, Rashi says, we're talking about a fast day which is a din de Rabbanan. Right? Like yesterday, for example, right? Tzom Gedalia. Tzom Gedalia is a din de Rabbanan. And he eats now on Tzom Gedalia. So, because it's an Avera, even though, albeit it's an Avera de Rabbanan, but still it's an Avera, he will not become a Ben Sarah Mara. Now, why? Now, for the Dvar Mitzvah, so we could say, like we have been saying, because that's not addictive behavior. Meaning, in the context of a Mitzvah, so that's normal, that's Ragil. But in terms of an Avera, why won't he become a Ben Sarah Mara? So the Gemara here gives the explanation. So, in order for him to qualify as a Ben Sarah Mara, he has to be in defiance of his parents and strictly in defiance of his parents. Meaning, if he's in defiance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that will not make him a Ben Sarah Mara. Now, I would say cynically that would make him a normal teenager, but that's, that's a little cynical and it's certainly not always true. And, a lot of good kids out there. But the, what do you mean? I'll just simply say it's much easier just for me to say, and it's probably the most correct thing to say, because there is a kasuf, meaning you're right. In order to be a Ben Sarah Mara, he has to be in defiance of his parents, but that's it. In other words, the meat has to be kosher. Fine. And by the way, when we say the meat has to be kosher, even that's not perfectly accurate. Like the example we just gave, meaning it's a fast day. The meat's perfectly kosher. It's just that you're not allowed to eat today. That's also considered dvar avera. That also will not qualify him towards the ben sarah mara. The Gemara are just going launching right into the Gemara. We're talking about including also pressed fig cake. Back in the good old days, so the fruits back in the good old days were intoxicating, right? Certain fruits were intoxicating. So shasu kol mashke v'lo shasu yain lasui dvash v'chalav, right? Honey, probably here date honey and milk, so they are intoxicating. Okay, I don't know of it having any intoxicating effect nowadays, but okay, that's nowadays. Back then, so date honey, milk, pressed fig cake, so they were intoxicants. They were intoxicating foods. Remember Shoftim? Yael gave us, Yael gave Sisra milk. Okay, Gemara says she did other things as well to tire him out, but that's not for now. These are intoxicating foods. And again, the point over here is that even though they're intoxicating, and even though you can make the argument that that's addictive forming, but again, to become a Ben Sarah Mara, the details are very specific. And over here, we're learning together that it has to be meat and it has to be wine. And even though there are other addictive, intoxicating substances that a person could take, that's not going to make him a Ben Sarah Mara. Detain the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Achol Devela Kiyos V'Shas Devash V'Chalav Nechlas L'Mikdash Chayev. In fact, we know that in other areas of halacha where you're not allowed to be under the influence, you cannot be intoxicated. So there, it's an expansion of any intoxicating substances. So let's say you are you're under the influence of the milk and the date honey, and you go into the Beis Hamikdash, you're Chayev Misa. You're not allowed to go into the Beis Hamikdash in a state of intoxication. And there, it's anything that intoxicates. But here in the halachas of Ben Tzor Amora, so it's just very specific. It's just specifically meat and wine. Top of Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph, Einenu Nasa Ben Tzor Amora, Ashi Ocha Basav Yishayayin, Tan Rabbanu, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Alchol Kamaich V'lo Ocha Basar, Shasa Kol Mashka V'lo Shasa Yayin, Einu Nasa Ben Tzor Amora, Ashi Ocha Basav Yishayayin. So, okay, so a reiteration of what we just got done saying, it has to be meat, it has to be wine. Shenemar Zolel V'Sovei. Now the pasuk says Zol Lava Sovei by Ben Tzor Amora. Now those words, Afa Bisha Narayla Dover Zechla Dover. Now those words themselves do not say meat and wine. And if it were just for the Torah by itself, we wouldn't know necessarily that it's meat and wine. However, we do have good clues throughout the other areas of Nach. We already saw one pasuk where the Gemara is going to quote this pasuk again from Mishlei Perchav Gimel. Shenemar Al Tehi Besovei Yain Bezolalei Basar Lamo. Okay, wonderful. So we have the pasuk over here that clearly connects yain with sovei and meat with zolal. V'omer ki sovei v'zolal yoresh v'karim tabish numa. And the Gemara quotes another pasuk from the same parak in Mishlei, which also speaks to the idea that the person who's sovei v'zolal, again, doesn't use, this pasuk does not use the words meat and wine, but it says that he's going to become impoverished. The reason why he's going to become impoverished is because these foods are addictive forming, and he's just going to be spending all his money on drinking the wine and eating meat. I'm Rabbi Zera Kol Ayashim Bebeis HaMedrash Taraso Nasas Lo Karayim Karayim. As long as we're on this pasuk in Mishlei, so the Gemara quotes another drasha, not related, but still connected to the pasuk, and that is that if you go to sleep in the Beis Medrash, so your learning becomes torn and ripped up. Shenemar v'karayim tabish numa. Numa from the word naim, which means sleep. Karayim means torn up. Rashi over here explains that if you're dozing off in the Beis Medrash while learning, so what's going to end up happening is that you're going to have very spotty memories of the learning that you did. So in other words, you won't have a good flow and an organized look at that which you learned. You will be spotty, literally spotty in terms of what you know. And so it's not good for your learning. Okay, I don't know if this Gemara speaks to the idea that you're not allowed to nap in the Beis Medrash. Maybe you are. The Gemara over here is just talking about during Shir. Meaning during Shir, that's where it's going to really affect your learning. At least that's the way Rashi understands the Gemara here. Continuing now in the Mishnah. So now we're going to be talking about who you steal from and where you eat the food after you stole. And again over here, let's make this point again. I don't mind repeating this point. It's so important. Right? The Gemara here is not condoning anything outside of Ben Tzor Amora. The Gemara is just simply pointing out over here that to become a Ben Tzor Amora in the most legal term, in the most legal sense, you must follow very regiment procedure. And the idea, as the Gemara is going to point out, is that we're looking for addictive forming behaviors. So if it's not an addictive forming behavior, even though it's wrong, it's bad, it's us, or you're stealing from your parents. But still, if it's not addictive forming behavior, the child will not become a Ben Tzor Amora, and that's what we're learning together in the Mishnah. I'm going to read the Mishnah quickly, and all the explanation is going to come out of the Gemara. So I'll read the Mishnah right now with no explanation or no rationale. Gana Mishal Aviv, you steal from Dad V'Acha Bershus Aviv, and you eat in Dad's house with the stolen, with the food that you bought with the stolen money. So, or Mishal Achem V'Acha Bershus Achem, or you steal from others and you eat in other people's houses, or Mishal Achem V'Acha Bershus Aviv, you steal from others and eat in Dad's house. All this is wrong, bad, etc., etc., etc. You're not a Ben Tzor Amora. In order for you to become a Ben Tzor Amora, you have to steal from Dad, and you have to then take it by meat and drink and by wine and eat and drink it in somebody else's house. The Gemara is going to explain why. We'll hold off on explanation for now. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Achigno, Mishal Aviv, Mishal Imo. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda throws in another qualifier, which is that it's insufficient to steal just from one parent. In order to qualify as a Ben Tzor Amora, you have to steal from both parents, from mom and from dad. Okay. The Gemara now starts off the discussion. Okay, so let's start off with point number one of the Mishnah. You stole from dad, you bought the meat, you bought the wine with the stolen money, and you drink it and eat it in your dad's home. Okay. That is not going to be addictive-forming behavior. Why? Because you're terrified of your father. He catches you, he finds out, so understandably, he'll get very upset with you. So now, this is not addictive-forming behavior because you'll sneak it in every now and then, but you're not going to do it with any kind of regularity. And Mishal Acherim va'achal b'rishus Acherim afagav do abayis lo shchiach. Stealing from other people and eating in other people's houses, so you don't have the fear of your parents, but at the same time, the money's not readily available. You're going to have to go out of your way to steal, and again, we're looking for the kind of behavior which is easy behavior to become addicted to. So therefore, and wait, one more, and v'kol shekein, Mishal Acherim va'achal b'rishus aviv. Stealing from mother and eating in dad's house, so there you have two things that prevent it from becoming addictive forming. Number one, to go to other people's house and steal from other people's houses. That's enu shchiach. And then to eat the stolen the meat purchased with the stolen money in your own parents' house. Now you're scared of your parents. So the kol shekein mishal chem v'achav b'shut aviv lo shchiach le ubais ad. But here now, if the kid were now to steal from his parents, and parents have money around the house all the time, so that's shchiach, and then buy meat and wine and drink and eat in somebody else's house, where no longer he has the fear of his parents, this is addictive forming behavior. Because now the money's available, and because he's eating the food elsewhere, he's practicing his gluttony elsewhere. He doesn't have the fear of his parents, and this can turn into an addiction. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, Omer, Achiknav, Mishal Aviv, Mishal Imo. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda says that he has to steal from mom and from dad. Imo Manala, the Gemara over here asks its traditional question that it always asks whenever we talk about a married woman and money, and that is a married woman and money, so she doesn't have her own money. In other words, we know the halacha is that a married woman, all her money goes to her husband. At the beginning of the marriage, all the money is sent to her husband. Even over the course of the marriage, if she comes into money, so that'll become nechse malug. The husband will get the peros. She'll have the karen, but the husband will get the peros. And furthermore, on top of all that, anyone who gives her money, that money's going to go to her husband. Mitzia seisha goes to her husband. Okay, so basically, the Gemara is now asking its classic age-old question. How can you be stealing from mom? Mom doesn't have her own bank account. Okay, so Mashakan Seishakan Abala. And the Gemara says, the Gemara just simply spells it out. It's very simple. So the question here is really simple. So I'm Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Mr. Uda, Mechenes Lavi Velimo. So the Gemara says, look, and I'm explaining the Gemara like Rashi right now. Look, we also know that a husband has to support his wife, meaning as part of the financial responsibility and obligation of being a husband. So the husband has to give an allowance, a food allowance to his wife. So right now what the Gemara is suggesting is that what dad did is that dad gave meat and wine to his wife for the mizonos, which he's obligated to give her. Once he hands it over to her, now it officially becomes hers. Halachically, it's hers. And that would be a scenario in which the kid could steal from both dad and from mom, because now mom has the meal.
Why do you have to steal from both? Because it says, sir, umar, and it can be, you know, it's either one that you're worried against.
No, the shidur of Yosef Rav Yehuda, why both? So the pasuk says, "En enosh omed b'kol aviv uv'kol imo." The Torah mentions mom and dad. The Torah is not clear. To be fair, the Torah is not clear that you stole from both, but that's Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda's opinion. The Gemara does not cite a source in terms of how he knows it, but that's the basic idea. So v'amar Rabbi Chanan bar Mulda, amar Rav Huna. The Gemara over here is just bothered by a technical problem. In other words, to become a Ben Zohar Mor, you have to steal money, and with that money buy meat and wine. Over here, if dad supplied mom with the meat and wine, and he stole the meat and wine, again, all that's wrong, all that's bad, but that doesn't qualify as a Ben Zohar Mor, because you have to steal money. But the Gemara provides a really simple solution. I'm sorry. Okay, so the Gemara says it's a really simple solution. What Dad did is Dad didn't give Mom actual food, but he gave her per diem. So in other words, again, there's a chiyuv mezonos that a husband has to his wife. So in the morning, so before Dad went to work, so he handed his wife, you know, a little bit of money. Here's your, you know, you go out today and buy some food. So which he's obligated to do. So now we can have a scenario in which now that he gave her that money is halachically considered hers. And now that money is considered hers, so we can now have a scenario in which the kid is going to be stealing from Dad and from Mom as well. Gemara gives another simple solution in terms of how it is that Mom can have money. And that is somebody, a third party gave her money. And we have this a number of times throughout the Gemara. And what the third party can do is the third party can give her money and say, I'm giving you this money, but to the exclusion of your husband. And that can happen. Halachically, that can happen, where that money can be restricted and be earmarked, limited only to her. Okay. Haya Aviv wrote that, we're up to the next Mishnah, we're in the middle of Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. Haya Aviv wrote that v'imo eino rotza. Aviv eino rotza v'imo rotza. Eino nasa ben sara umara. Okay, so a simple halach in the Mishnah, and that is that I need two interested parents in going through with the Ben Sarah Mara. Okay? Hard to imagine, and hard. Close to impossible. To imagine that the parent have to make this choice, and then what the Mishnah is telling us is that it's not one parent that has to make this choice, but it's two parents who have to submit their child over to the Beis Din in order to go forward with the process of the Ben Sarah Mara, and according to the Mishnah, it has to be both. One interested parent is insufficient. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Im Lo Aisa Ima Ru'i L'Aviv Eino Nasa Ben Sarah Amar. Now Rabbi Yehuda has a shita which we don't right now even understand, but we're reading and we're translating. If Mom is not fit towards Dad, the child does not have Ben Sarah Amar. Okay. Immediately the Gemara just launches right into right into the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. What does he mean? My Eino Ru'uya Ilei Mechayv Krisus Mechayv Misus based in. So the Gemara says, maybe what that means is that Dad never should have married Mom. They were prohibited to one another. And so maybe that's what the Mishnah means. That's what Rabbi Yehuda means. But the Gemara says, but that doesn't make sense. Sof, avu, avu, aninu, v'imei, mininu. Look over here. Whether the parents were not allowed to marry one another. At this point in time, it doesn't matter. Is Dad the biological father? The answer, of course, is yes. Is Mom the biological mother? The answer is yes. So is it Aviv v'Imo? The answer is yes. The parents, may not be permitted to be married to one another, but right now, they have a child. And it is Aviv v'Imo. So the Gemara says, so that shouldn't make a difference. So Ella b'shaviv l'Imo ka'amar. So the Gemara gives now an interesting, and quite frankly, an unusual explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, and that is that Mom and Dad look the same. Now, when I say look the same, I mean, I'm reading Rashi right now, and the Gemara is going to spell it out. It means they have the same voice, they have the same appearance, and they have the same height. Now, height, you understand, generally speaking, it's just, I think we're all hardwired this way. We're like, in other words, we're looking for compatibility in height. You know, there are obviously are height discrepancies, but generally speaking, that's something which is generally a match. But the look and the voice, okay, now obviously it's getting a little bit strange. And to that, let's just go straight forward into the Gemara. Tanya Nami Achim, the Gemara quotes the Brice, the Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Im lo isa imo shav la aviv b'kol v'mar v'koma. Like I said, the Gemara is going to spell them out. That if Mom and Dad do not look like one another, both in their appearance and in their height and in their voice, ein unasa ben sora mora, so then the child does not become a ben sora mora. Which now means that for a child to be Ben Sarah Mara, so Mom and Dad have to actually vocally sound the same to one another, that's nearly impossible. And that brings us to the next point of the Gemara, perhaps the most famous part of today's daf. So my time in the Amakra, and Neshameh B'kol Leinu. So he doesn't listen to our voice, meaning we have one singular voice. Midakol B'in and Shavim, Mar V'kom and Nami B'in and Shavim. And since the voice needs to be the same, the look and the height also needs to be the same as well. K'man Azlah Adetayim, Ben Sarah Mara Lohayev Elohasi Liyos. There is a brisa, the Gemara quotes it right now, in the middle of Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph, that Ben Sarah Mara never was, never will be, V'lama Nechtav, and why is it written in the Torah? Meaning the Torah just giving us theoretical halacha, So the Gemara says, yeah, basically, yes. Drosh v'kavel schar. It's part of the corpus of Torah. As part of the corpus of Torah, we're going to learn it and we're going to get schar for learning it. Meaning it's just as much a mitzvah of Lima Torah to be learning the part, the portion of Ben Sora Amara and the complementary Torah Shabbat Peh, the Gemara's, regarding the Ben Sora Amara, as it is to learn the halachas of Kashrus. As it is to learn the halachas of Tzitzis. Okay, even though it's theoretical, even though it's not practical, it's a part of the corpus of Torah. Okay, I know in the daf we do less of this because the daf is limited to the more relevant Gemara's, but even in the daf, right, after next couple of months, we're going to start Seder Kachim. In Seder Kachem, Zvachim, Menachos, we're going to be learning about the Beis Hamikdash and the Seder HaAvodah. And is that in other words, Drosh V'Kabel Schar? We're going to learn it, and it's going to be Kiyum in Limud HaTorah. So same thing over here as well. Keman to Rabbi Yehuda. Now the Gemara says that this follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, because again, Rabbi Yehuda says that for the child to be a Ben Sora Mora, mom and dad have to look and sound the same. It's, I'll say, nearly impossible, although it sounds like from the Gemara is saying it even stronger. Gemara is saying it's simply impossible. It's not going to happen. So this is now basically theoretical halacha, but again, theoretical halacha that is part of the corpus of Torah, Drosh V'Kabel Schar. And we can also add, by the way, in other words, in terms of what Drosh V'Kabel Schar means, is that not only that, but also just a lot of the lessons that we're learning from the Ben Sora Mora about addictive forming behavior, about the ills of gaining an addiction. Meaning there are model lessons, there are concrete lessons to be learned, even though the actual Ben Sora Umora penalty is never to be applied. Ibai Zema Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara points out, there's another opinion with another Tana that would also lead to the impossible nature of Ben Sora Umora, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. I can't imagine a parent, or for that matter, two parents, taking a child out and having him killed over the fact that he ate wine, he ate meat and drank wine. It's never going to happen. Now, it seems to be that Rabbi Shimon's only, his real question is concentrated on the fact that no parent will ever do that. Meaning it's not based on a technicality, it's just based on the idea that it's never going to, parents are never going to do this. But, and the reason why it's here, again, same idea. In other words, it's part of the corpus of Torah. I'm Rav Yonasan, ani reisiv yishavti al kivro. Now, Rav Yonasan says, I saw a Ben Sora Mora, meaning not the child, but I saw a child who was tried and convicted of Ben Sora Mora, and I sat on his grave. So Rav Yonasan obviously disagrees with the brises that we just quoted. The Gemara is going to now make the same point regarding another Avera in the Torah, and that is the subverted city. If an entire city becomes subverted to be worshipping idolatry, so that entire city is going to be subject to the Chenek penalty, and all the property in the city is going to be collected and burned in the middle of the city. And according to a Brisa, this too never materialized, never happened. If in the entire city one of the houses has a mezuzah, so then the city will be exempt from the ir hanidachas penalty. Why? So first of all, we know that the ir hanidachas, everything in the city is going to be amassed into the center and burned in the center of the city. Now, if there's one mezuzah, that mezuzah cannot be burned. Why? So we know that we're not allowed to destroy Shem Hashem. Right? This is the idea that we refer to as Shemus. When you have something with a pasuk written on it, and the mezuzah has two partials written on it, so you're not allowed to destroy it. That's mechikas Hashem. That's an issur in the Torah. So because one house in the city, if one house in the city were to have a mezuzah, that would mean then that we would be taking off his mezuzah and bringing it to the center of the city and burning it. Now here, I understand you can make a really simple argument, and that is, look, take everything in the city, excluding the mezuzah. I understand you can make that argument. But the way Rabbi Eliezer learns it is that if I cannot meet the criteria of taking everything of the city and moving it to the center, so then the city just simply gets an exemption. I'm Rav Yonasan, ani re'asiv v'yashavti al tila. And again, Rav Yonasan says, also, I disagree with this point as well. The Aaron Idachas actually happened. I was once on a mound of what was once an ex-Iran Idachas. And now we are here in the trifecta. The third mitzvah, which according to some Tanayim, never actually happened. It's too unlikely. Close to impossible for it to happen. And again, the reason why the Torah introduces it to us is just simply because it's part of the corpus of the Torah. And that is a house with tzaras. Three things can have tzaras. A person can have tzaras, his clothing can have tzaras, and the house can have tzaras. So those are the three parshios in a row in the parshios of Tzriya and Mitzora. The base Hamanuga, according to this brice, according to Rav Elazar Rabbi Shimon, never happened. Why? So, Keman ki Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon ditan, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon omer, lo olam in abayis tamei, ad, shiire. Kshtei grisim al shtei avanim, b'shtei kselim, b'keren zavis. Arko kshnei grisim v'rachva kukris. In order to find a base Hamanuga, you must find a tzaras spot on the house, in one of the corners of the house, where it is in length two grisim, the gris is a shear, and in height one gris, going and basically creating an L in one of the corners of the house. Then and only then is the house a base of Manuga. Under all of those circumstances, the house will not become a base of Manuga. My time with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Ksiv Kir, Ksiv Kiros. The Torah lists it in the singular and in the plural. Ezo Kir, Sheik, Karos. How can I have one wall that is really two walls? Have Yom HaZeh Karen Zavis. That's in the corner, on the L, in the perpendicular of the house. So that's where you have one wall meeting another wall. So it's one wall / two walls. Then and only then, when you have the tzaras spot bracketing that one wall, so then and only then is the house of Beis Manuga, it's nearly impossible. Tanya Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzedek Malkam Haya B'tchum Aza. There was a place out near Aza. Vayikarno so churvasa sagirta. And it was called the sequestered ruin, meaning it was the Beis Manuga. Amar Rabbi Shimon Ishkvar Akko, Pamach Zalach L'Galo. One time I went up to the north. And he says that these are the stones that were removed from a house with tzaras. In other words, the first order of trying to be metara house with tzaras on it is to remove the localized area of the tzaras. And then, if the tzaras comes back, then you have to demolish the entire house. Okay. We are in the Mishnah on the Bam of Ein Aleph Amud Aleph, continuing now with the halachas of Mitzora Mora. Okay, we're finishing up, meaning today's daf, a little bit of tomorrow's daf, are the ends of the Gemara regarding Ben Sora Mara. So these are one of the last Mishnahs. If mom or dad is either has no hands, or incapable of walking, or is a mute, or is blind, or can't hear, so the child does not become a Ben Sora Mara. Shenamar, and here, again, everything we just said now is going to get extracted from Pesukim. V'tafsubo, the Mishnah says they're going to grab him. Aviv v'imo v'lo gedimim. Which means that in order for the child to be a Ben Sora Mara, they have to have the ability of his parents to grab him. Physically grab him.
What can he use a shlil?
Gzeres ha-kasef. I'm sorry I'm not giving, like, you know, wonderful answers, but I'm just saying that's, you know, it's you know, probably the most correct answer. V'lo gedimim v'otzio so v'lo chigrin. And they take him out, and in other words, they have to walk him out. So if they can't walk, so again, no. Va'amru, the pasuk says they have to stay. Velo ilman, so they can't be mute. B'neinu zeh, velo sumim, they have to be able to positively identify his son, their son, and so that means that they have to be able to see. Einenu shomeya b'kolenu velo charashim, they have to be able to hear themselves. If they're deaf, they don't. The child does not qualify as ben sora mara. Mitagrim, I'm sorry. Let me do that correctly. Masrim bo bifnei shlosha. So he's warned in front of three. Umalkin also, and he's subject to the Malkus, meaning that the Ben Sora Mara is not immediately given the capital punishment of Skila. But what happens is that there are basically two rounds of punishment. Round number one is Malkus. So in other words, if he receives a warning, hey, right, the two witnesses say, we just saw you steal the money from your parents, and we saw you buy the meat and the wine, and you're drinking the wine and you're eating the meat with the stolen money, and you are, right, you're 13 years of age, you're between 13 and 13 and 3 months, so you're now qualified as a Ben Sora Mara. and the witnesses give him a warning. So if he defies a warning, so in round one, malchus. Then, chazer v'kilkel, now as a repeat offender second time, nidon be'esrim v'shlosha. Now this turns into a capital case. All capital cases are seen in front of 23. Ve'inu niskal ad, shiusham shlosha harishonim shenemar b'ninu zeh, zeh shalaka b'vneim. And also over here, in order to assemble the court of 23 for the capital punishment, you must have the original members of that first Beis Din who gave him Malkus. Okay. Shema Menas Bina Krakid Yechsev. So you remember the Gemara in Daf Mem Hei. I know that some time ago. You remember the Gemara in Daf Mem Hei where the Gemara there had the following discussion. If there's a detail in the Torah, and we have an inability to comply with that detail, is that going to upset the entire mitzvah? Or in this case, Avera? Yes or no? So if you remember back on Mem Hei, that was subject to a machlokas. Our Gemara and our Mishnah seems to be making a very clear stand. Because the Mishnah says, if mom and dad, if either of them are missing hands, where they can't grab him, so that's it. In other words, story over, parsha done, he's no longer ben sora mora. Just because we can't comply with one detail of the Torah. All right, so, shmami nabina krakid dechsiv. So it sounds like from our Mishnah that we have a very clear and affirmative answer that yes, in order to carry out a mitzvah or an avera of the Torah, so you must be able to follow every single detail. Shani Acha, the Gemara says, well, we could deflect this proof and we could simply say that this is a localized halacha and this is not a general position. Dekule kra yiserehu. The entire pasuk is superfluous, and because the entire pasuk is superfluous, so therefore it allows us to be exacting with every detail has to be available, has to be compliable, otherwise we do away with it. But generally speaking, we don't need krak dichsiv. And see the Rashi over here who explains how it is that this entire pasuk is superfluous. Okay. Umasrim bifnei shlosha. Now he's warned in front of three. Now the Gemara here over here points out the obvious issue, which is, for a warning you don't need three, you only need two for a warning. Lama li betray saga. So the Gemara says, really, two is enough for the warning. Amrabai hachvi kamar sabai says, okay, so now we're going to say a simple pshat in the Mishnah, which is, masrim bo bifnei shnayim. Yeah, you warn him in front of two, or I should say better, the two are going to warn him, umakan osob ifnei shlosha. And in terms of the three is necessary for the actual malchus. Okay. Malchus ben ben sora echet tziva. A simple question. Where does it say in the Torah that you give malchus to the ben sora mora? Meaning the fact that he gets the death penalty, that's clear. But where does it say he gets malchus? Where is this coming from? So the Gemara cites, So basically, it's multiple gzeirah shavas that get us from one check mark to another check mark to another check mark. Where basically, if you, I almost mean this literally, if you connect the dots, or in this case, they'll connect the words of the gzeirah shava. So you get to the point where the words v'yisru comes out to mean you give him malchus. Again, I'm not going to go through the psukim right now. We'll take a look at Rashi. Rashi takes us through all the psukim that gets us from one pasuk to another pasuk. But again, for our purposes right now, I could just simply say gzeres hakasav. I could say gzeres hakasav, but really, truth of the matter is it's gzeres shavah. Okay. Chazav v'kilko nidam v'chav gimel v'chulei hami ba'ilei zev lo sumim. Now the Gemara says, now we learned the halacha in our Mishnah that the three judges who were the ones giving him the malchus, if then he becomes a repeat offender, those three judges have to now move and become part of the court of 23 to try him on the capital case. So the Gemara says, and how do we know that? Because it says b'neinu zeh, and it means that these judges have to say, oh yeah. In other words, we've seen this kid before. So im kein lichtov b'nein. I'm sorry. Let me just articulate the Gemara's problem. The Gemara's issue is that we already darshan the word b'neinu zeh, and that means that the parents can't be blind. So basically, we're double dipping a halacha from the same pasuk, and the Gemara is always against that. So the Gemara says, "Hi b'neinu who?" I skip a line. Yes, I did. Mi b'ayle zeh v'lo sumim. Okay. So we need the pasuk for the exclusion of a blind parent. Im kein lechtov kra b'neinu who? So the Gemara says, yeah. So if we want to exclude the blind parent, the Torah could have just simply said the words b'neinu hu. right? This is our son. So my b'nei nuzesh, mami natarte. From the fact this is b'nei nuzesh, so we now have two halachas that we just learned together. One, parents have to be able to positively, visually identify their child. And two, the judges on the capital case have to have been the same judges who tried him on the Malkus case. Okay. Next Mishnah. Baruch Hashalom Nigmar Dino V'Acharkach Hikiv Zekana Tachta Pater. Okay, so let's say that the child did everything to become a Ben Tzor Amora. In other words, the age requirement, he was there. The stealing from mom and from dad, depending on who you hold like, but stealing from mom and from dad, he did that. Buying the requisite amount of wine and meat, good. He did that as well. Eating it in a different location, off-site, out of the parents' house, he did that as well. Basically, he did everything that he was supposed to do to become a Ben Tzor Amora. Right? He checked every box, but, in other words, they just basically could not get the Beis Din around together to try him in time. So then, says the Mishnah, Pater. So we don't judge him anymore. So and the reason why we don't judge him anymore, says Rashi, is because at this point in time, if he were to do the crime at this point in time, so he would not be a B'nai Katala. He would be somebody subject to the death penalty. And even though, and I know this is fascinating, even though Lamaisa, he did the crime at the right time, right, within the right window, but because he was not tried till a later point in time, so therefore he's received an exemption. The imish nigmar dina baruch v'achar kachich kizgana tachton chayv. Let's say, however, says the Mishnah, that let's say the Beis Din tried him in the right time during that window of 13 to 13 and 3 months, and then after the trial and after the conviction, so what does the kid do? Kid, got a fresh pair of legs, young, 13-year-old, so he runs away. Successfully, at least for the time being. Okay, then we call the bounty hunters. So they track him down, they locate him. But it's later in time. It's after, you know, he's 14 years of age right now. So are we going to convict him already. So are we going to execute? Says the Mishnah, yes. Under those circumstances, you are. So he's going to be chayev. Once again, a fascinating Rashi. Why? I'm reading the words of Rashi. Because once Beis Din issued a conviction, he is a dead man. Okay? We have no longer any need to look for any kind of argument that he is zoche and he should be acquitted. It's an interesting Rashi for a host of reasons, but notably, you remember two parakim ago in the sixth parak of Sanhedrin, we talked about the appeal process, right? You remember we had the guy with the horse, the guy with the flag outside the Beis Din, waving to the guy on the horse. The guy on the horse is now going to chase after in the event that anyone can make any kind of argument that he should be zocha. So even after conviction, it's pretty clear, we learned together back in the sixth parak, his story's not over yet. And okay, right, but I'm saying, right, but still, the idea is that him walking out of Beis Din is not necessarily going to be his execution, won't necessarily result in execution. I'm just simply pointing out, ultimately, you have to be right, meaning, at least within Rashi's explanation, you have to be right. I'm just pointing out that we did learn a couple weeks ago in the Daf that walking out of Beis Din, even after a conviction, is not the end-all be-all. And now, the way Rashi is presenting our Gemara, no, it is. Okay, and you have to strike a distinction. Maybe over here it's just at a later point in time. Okay, I'm just, you know.
It's a Gemara of Din, though, right? Like, there's already a status achieved that's always been punished. You know?
Right, but the same thing is true in the sixth parak. He also had a Gemara of Din. And he also left the Beis Din convicted. It's just that if somebody can make an appealing argument, you know, he'll be brought back they'll deliberate more. Okay, anyway. All right. There's something to think about. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Okay, so we are talking now, right? This brings us to a really interesting discussion, which the Gemara now is going to entertain. And that is basically being convicted while being in one category, and then, but for whatever reason, sentencing wasn't The actual sentence, the actual execution was not done, and then he goes into a new category. And that entering into a new category, is that going to give him an exemption? So I know I spoke in the abstract. Here, let's go with the concrete examples of the Gemara. So Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Noach shebirchas Hashem v'achakach nesgai. So he had a ben Noach who was birchas Hashem, violating one of the seven Noachide laws, subject to the death penalty, and then he converted.
After
the Gemara, he converted. Now, admittedly, right? The court right now, the Beis Din, who converted him. So we could. I'm trying to say this respectfully, but we could say like, what were they doing? Right? Was this the best candidate to become a convert? Okay, I understand. But anyway, but he's going to be Potter. By the way, I may not be right about what I told you. In other words, it could be that he didn't even have a Gemara Din. But in other words, but you had witnesses and you had, in other words, but we know he did it. So if after converted, he's going to be Potter, Hol v'nishtanis dino, v'nishtanis misaso. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you why, and fascinating. And because even though it is a capital crime to blaspheme, both as a Ben Noach and as a Jew, but the punishment's not the same. As a Ben Noach, blasphemy for a Ben Noach results in chenek. Sorry, let me say that better. Sayef. I know why I said chenek. Okay, but it results in sayef, decapitation. As is all penalties for a Ben Noach, all capital punishments for a Ben Noach is going to be under sayef. And once he becomes a Jew, what's the penalty for Megade, for blasphemy? Skila. So since it's a different death penalty, so therefore he cannot be tried. Okay. Neima misayele. Now this halacha that was presented to us by Rabbi Chanina seems to me that our Mishnah is a fantastic support. Why? Because remember what we just learned together in the Mishnah? Baruch Hashlo Nigma Dina V'achakach Hekiv Zekana Tachton Pater. So, if he ran away from the court, this is before conviction. I was wrong about what I said earlier. So this is before conviction. So he ran away from the court, and then they hunted and got him after the window's gone, after the window's over. He's now 14 years of age, and they got him, so they can't try him. Why not? Because if he were to do the crime right now, he would not serve. He would not be subject to the execution. So my time, Allah Mishum Darminan Hovi Shani Shane. So the Gemara says, so what do you see over here? That if there is a change of category, so therefore he's not going to be receiving the execution. So the Gemara says, we could say the same thing by the Megadev who converted. So the Gemara says, Lo Shani Hachadi Avid Ashallah Bar Ketalahu. Gemara says, that's really different. They're significantly different. Look, with the Ben Sora Mora, so if he did the crime at 14, the same thing at 14, there'd be no execution. That's a big difference between doing the crime at 13 and being subject to execution, and doing the crime at 14 and being subject to no execution. Over here, what are we talking about? We're talking about the Megadev, where if he did it as a non-Jew, Chayv Misa. If he did it as a Jew, Chayv Misa. The only change is how the execution is going to be done. But the Gemara says, but they're really not the same, and they're not comparable. Tashma. Let's do one more for today. Imesh Nigmar Dina Baruch V'Achar Kachik is the Karatach Tan Chayev. Nigmar Dina Kamart, so Nigmar Dino Gavra Ketalahu. So the Gemara says, now our Mishnah talks about where if it's post-conviction. Where if it's post-conviction, and then we find him later, so we're going to put him to death. So the Gemara says, so what do you see over here? So you see that his status won't change. But the Gemara says, but what kind of proof was that? That's post-conviction. And again, I'm going to go back to the Rashi we learned back in the Mishnah. Post-conviction, he's a dead man. Just happens to be that we haven't executed him yet, but he's a dead man. Okay, stop here. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tashma, right in the middle of Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, finishing up tomorrow the Ben Sora Mar Gemaras. We have just a little bit more to go on this topic of changing category and whether or not you're going to be subject to execution in your new state. So that finishes up tomorrow. The classic Mishnah, the Ben Sora Mar's Nidon Mishum Sofo. And tomorrow we start one of the most famous Gemaras in Sanhedrin, Abba B'Machteres, right, someone's tunneling into your home.